It's time to fire it up.
Why you gotta make me feel inferior? Because I'm on the grill, B.
From the chow.
Food for action.
To the gear.
It's 122,000 BTUs of char-broiling power.
To the drinks.
Drink some beers.
These guys have you covered.
We're just kicking back out here. Just having a barbecue.
This is the Grillin' Guys.
Welcome. You listen to Grillin' Guys on the Grillin' Guys Talk Network. Hey, it's good to be back on the air. Barbecue Bob and I got a little dance with Rona.
And, the woo flu, gotcha.
Yeah, so we had to take a couple weeks off and recuperate so as we weren't infecting Trevor and all the other people that are here at the station. But we're back, and Barbecue Bob had a little sabbatical with his bride scheduled this week. So joining me in the studio is a familiar voice. If you've been a Grilling Guys listener for a while, it's the baritone of beer, Chaz Thompson. Hey, Chaz, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks, Randy. I'm glad you called.
Yeah, yep, so am I, because this is going to be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to this show. But before we dive in too deep, here we are in the middle of February, and you're a man of many talents, but one of which is you're a international ice fisherman. And I got to believe with this huge cold snap that we've dealt with over the last, 10, 12 days and the foot of snow that we've got around where we are, that probably slowed your ice fishing down a little bit, didn't it?
Well, we took a couple of days off because it was pretty much dangerously cold out there.
Right.
And even with the great suits that we wear, it's just not comfortable, and to take friends, it's probably not safe.
Right, and you're trying to take a fish off the hook if you're pan fishing, and you either got a glove on and it's your dexterity's gone, or you take your gloves off to do it, and then you got a wet hand and wind chill that's 10, 15 below.
The guys with the pop-up shelters and such,
right.
You've helped me at events where we've dealt with that pop-up in
right,
the wind.
Yeah, right.
Wind don't cooperate with pop-ups.
Yeah, I seem to remember grilling some hot dogs for some Boy Scouts on Reed's Lake here in West Michigan, and I was inside a tent, and a gust of wind popped up, knocked that grill right in my lap, man. And that grill probably weighs 50 pounds, but that wind, that tent was like a sail. It just moved across there.
And hot dogs and chili sauce everywhere.
Really, man. Yeah. And somebody said, well, why didn't you pick it up? It was just the ice. It's like, well, it was so slippery that day. We had put sawdust down, so all the dogs and everything fell in the sawdust, so we just started over. But anyway, that's a whole other story. But
the fish have been biting, though.
They have.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're in West Michigan, and I don't need your fishing hole secrets, but what are you seeing for ice, and what do you think they're biting on?
We're seeing, 8 inches plus in the Grand Rapids area. You're 5-6 inches even safe down, almost down to the border of Indiana there. The guys have been down, Duck Lake out there in the southern part of the state. The guys have been just pounding the bluegills down there on that stuff.
Right.
And this cold snap's really helped get the fish moving and such.
Yeah.
And those people for the past couple of years have had a hard time getting ice. And
right.
No issue now. Maybe it's here now.
Yeah. Yeah. It is here now. Now, are you still competing in the ice circuit? Is that still a part of your world?
Well, we took a year off from the Nationals, National Tournament Circuit, although we're going this weekend to help administrate up at be at Houghton Lake later today.
Okay.
And tomorrow, Sunday morning, we're going to be doing some of the administrative work on weighing in fish and all that kind of stuff for the NAIFC tournament on Houghton Lake.
Okay. And is that all about panfish, or is that anything you can catch? How's that work?
That is panfish. You turn in 8 bluegill and 8 crappie for a 2-man team.
Okay.
You can also tag one of those fish as your big fish.
Okay.
And there's usually a side pot on that,
Yeah, yeah, right.
So
you cull them. Or are you throwing them all on the ice and you just grab the 8 and 8 that are the best ones?
Michigan says 25 per person, so you can have 50 fish out of the water at any time. But there's going to be some obvious little ones that are going to go right back down the hole.
Yep.
And there's nothing saying that the ones that you turn in, don't go back in your bucket afterwards so you can go clean some fish.
Go home and fillet them. And that's a great segue into what the rest of this show is going to be about is with filleting fish, you need a knife, right? And Chaz and I have been maybe sharing a pint here and there and talking about a show for the future that the future has arrived. And we're going to do a knife show today. And we've got some interesting people. Got a guy that makes custom knives. We've got a chef that teaches at the culinary school knife skills. And then,
well, knives are such an important part of what you do. And I think I've been ashamed sometimes to go to some people's grilling setup, and their knives are not up to snuff.
Not up to snuff. They're terrible. I mean, I'm most of my friends that have knives, one, don't take care of them, and two, they're kind of sharp if you're only cutting butter.
Yeah.
But beyond that, those are the ones that hurt you, right? I mean, if you got a dull knife, that's if you got a saw on things to get through it, that's when knives slide and cuts happen.
I was the other day, I was at an event, and young lady was out there, and she's dicing up tomatoes for a taco bar.
Right.
And she's making ketchup.
Right.
Because
exactly.
Her knife was so dull. I said, give me 5 minutes with that knife.
Right.
I went
right.
to the truck and got some tools that I always carry because
right.
you know me.
Right.
And I fixed that knife. And then she didn't have a drop of tomato juice on the cutting board after she was using a sharp knife. And she's
right.
like, oh, my God.
Never knew. Right. Because
she says,
all...
I thought you'd throw them away and buy a new one. I'm like, well, the knife selling guys might say that.
Right. Well, and and I think that what we'll find, too, as we go through the show today is for most, like most other things, you get what you pay for with a knife. I mean, and it's the steel that they're made of. It's how the bevel on the edge and how you take care of them. All of that goes into pulling it out of the drawer and having it be sharp. I know when I met my wife, one of the things I did for her the first time was cook for her, right? I mean, if you got it, you got it, right?
Yeah.
You bring it. So, but I was in her kitchen. I wasn't in mine, and I brought over a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to be, you know, that and a bag of chips, and till I got to the knives. And then it was like I had to stop everything. And I'm like, do you have a knife sharpener? And she's like, no. I said, well, I'll be right back. I went out in my truck and got one that I carry with me everywhere I go. It sounds a little fanatical, but it's absolutely not. If you've ever worked with a sharp knife versus a dull knife, you'll never work with a dull knife again. Yeah, right there, a little Lansky tool or whatever that is. Yep, got
yeah,
the diamond.
Yeah, I carry one with me all right. the time. And it's just very critical to your skill, your swagger at the grill.
Right.
I mean, we always talk about, does your grill look good? You got your setup all arranged?
That's
you got
right.
all the tools you need? A knife is critical.
Right, it is. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways. There's stones. There's the little V sharpeners, which are quick little touch-up. If you've got it real serious, you've got a ding in your blade or a nick in your blade, it gets a little more cumbersome to do that kind of stuff. And I realize this sounds a little fanatical, but it's a big part of what we do. But before we get to any of our guests, tell me what you've been grilling. I know you don't ever clip the corner of a man card. You're grilling year-round like I am. And what's been on the grill lately?
Venison.
Venison.
Oh, yeah. I harvested well this past fall, so.
Good man.
Doing some nice venison steaks, some kebabs. I've been really getting back into kebabs.
Now, do you marinate those or do you just take them right out of the pack?
I marinate the meat and the mushrooms.
Okay.
Because the mushroom is just water. So
right.
we got to replace that with something flavorful.
Yeah. Damn if you don't. Right.
So,
but the what do you like to use in a marinade on your venison?
You got to have a little acid. You got to have some moisture, maybe a little bit of sweetness, not too much. Some oil to lube her up and flavors. So
right.
there's always going to be some crushed garlic in there. There's probably going to be some herbs in there, pepper. You got to have a little salt so you can draw that excess moisture out so that the good stuff can get in.
Right. It's a little swap situation. Yeah.
Yeah. And
exactly.
you're going to have that ready, you know, at least 6-7 hours ahead of time.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, it is that time of year to – I spend a lot of time pulling stuff out of the freezer. You know, when it's cold like this, I'm not – big on running out and, you know, regardless of your political persuasion, our governor has shut down our restaurants all but a little. And I guess that got moved out to March 29 in the last little conference, which is, I'm sorry, but I just disagree with that completely. If you know anybody that lives in our neighboring states, they're eating just fine in all of their restaurants. But unfortunately, that can't happen here. So you spend more time at home and eating and it's just clean out the freezer, and the venison is a good thing to do that with. But coming up next, we're going to talk to a guy by the name of Corey Miller, He's from Miller Custom Knives. You're not going to want to miss this one because this guy starts out with a steel rod and turns it into a family heirloom. So stick with us. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Shasta with Old World Olive Company. I want to personally invite you to visit one of our tasting rooms and sample any one of our certified extra virgin olive oils or aged balsamic vinegars. My knowledgeable staff can show you hundreds of pairing combinations. We also offer seasonings, tapenades, and specialty wines to complete your meal. So please, step into my kitchen and make a lasting memory of your own. Or you can visit us at theoldworldoliveco.com.
Hey, when's the last time you had a really great root beer float? I mean the kind that makes you remember walks with your grandfather. Come on over to Schmoe's Brewing Company in Grand Rapids or Petoskey, and we have some handcrafted root beer, probably the best in the state of Michigan. That's 2600 Patterson in Grand Rapids or 109 West Mitchell in Petoskey. You know you're dying for a good root beer float.
Hey, this is Job from the Grilling Guys, and I want to talk to you about my favorite butcher shop. It's Sobey Meats on the northwest side of Grand Rapids on Remembrance Road. This is a custom butcher. They'll cut any piece of meat that you want, any size, any way that you can dream of to make sure that your grilling experience is perfect. Sobey Meats smokes all their own meats. They've got kielbasas and over 40 different flavors of brats. You've got to try Sobey Meats on Remembrance Road. Tell them the Grilling Guys sent you.
Fenn Valley Vineyards, located on the shores of Lake Michigan in Fennville, Michigan, 45 minutes south of Grand Rapids. It's one of the most beautiful, most picturesque vineyards in North America. This family's been making wine for over 40 years. You have to bring your friends and family to the tasting room and experience pure Michigan wine. Fenn Valley Vineyards.
I am a guy and I like fire.
The Grilling Guys.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Once again, good to be back after my visit with Rona for a couple weeks. We were off the air while we dealt with that, but everybody's well, and Barbecue Bob's just out on a little sabbatical. And joining me in the studio is the Baritone of Beer, Chaz Thompson. And Chaz, we've been talking about this show for a year anyway, about doing a knife show.
Knife show.
Right. And one of the things I did was I started researching knife makers in the state of Michigan, where we're at, because, you know, this is all about home. And so I found a guy down in Allegan, Michigan, which is south and west of Grand Rapids. His name is Corey Miller, and he has Miller Custom Knives, and he's joining us on the live line right now. Hey, Corey, thanks for making time.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey, we're good. We're good. Thank you. And you know, I kind of want to turn this over to you because I'm betting that the average guy or gal really doesn't have any idea what it is you do to make a knife. So could you start us out and tell us what that process looks like?
At Miller Knives, we do a lot of custom. About 99% of the knives that I make are 100% handmade, hand forged. I like to do a lot of like family heirloom stuff where we'll take, you know, like grandpa's old hammer or an old piece of wood from the barn or the farm. Even made stuff out of like old traps.
So you're really recycling a lot of family heirlooms into a knife.
We do. I do a lot of that. The big thing that I pride myself in is my Damascus blades, and those are 100% hand forged. I usually use a blend of 1095 high carbon steel and 1520 high carbon steel. And basically what that is you'll take a stack of that. You'll take, say, 10 pieces of 1095, 10 pieces of 1520, and you'll alternate them pieces. And so you'll end up with like a 4-inch by 2-inch wide block of steel. And I will bring that up to temp in my forge to where it'll actually, the metals will adhere themselves to each other. It's all about temperature.
So Corey, without giving away your secrets, what approximately So you're sandwiching these pieces of metal together. Some are harder than others. Is that what those numbers meant?
No, the 1095 high carbon steel, that will give you your darks in the pattern. And then the 15N and 20 has a high nickel content, and that'll give you your brights. So like if you see all the different lines.
Yeah, Damascus blade, you know, yep. It has those very signature color stripes in it. It's almost like a zebra kind of thing when you look at one. And yep. It by mixing those steels, you get those stripes in there as he hammers and draws it out to make a fine piece of cutlery out of it.
So Corey, what is that temperature approximately? It's a smelting oven, right? Am I using that right term?
No, it's not. It's a smelting is when you take like
that's separating metals. So you're using a forge to heat it.
Yeah,
right?
Everything I do is done on a. Through a propane forge. When I first started out years and years ago, I did everything on coal, but the propane is a lot more efficient. And,
a lot easier to control.
It is, yep.
You don't have to have Randy down there shoveling coal for you.
Right.
Now, a lot of your knives, are they mostly hunting knives or are they kitchen knives or
no? Pretty much if it has an edge on it, I can make it. I make everything from swords to axes, tomahawks, hunting knives, folding knives, fillet knives, a lot of high-end kitchen cutlery, chef's knives.
Interesting.
It's really endless.
With a chef's knife, being that we're talking about grilling, and that a chef's knife is a very important tool to have around, what are the most important qualities in a knife that you expect to see and you strive to make?
Well, the biggest thing in a high quality, well, any knife, but especially in a chef's knife, is you want something that's light and balanced, has a nice height. If it's like a Santuco or a classic chef's, you want something with a nice high heel so you're not hitting your knuckles. And that's the distance between the handle and the very farthest back of the cutting edge of the blade.
Right. Give you room for your hand between that and the cutting board. Right.
Yep. You don't want to be knocking your knuckles on it. And really just, you know, something that's comfortable to the hand. And that's what I strive for. Like if you order a knife from me, I go right down the detail of your hand size, if it's right or left-handed. When you're getting a knife from me, you're getting an absolute one-off custom blade made just for you. There's no two alike.
Okay, so for us guys out there that really appreciate our toys and really appreciate fine equipment, we buy the best guns, we buy the best trucks, stuff. Father's Day's coming. And if I were to go out there and say that, you know, I got a friend that I need to buy a knife for, how do we get started with you to say, hey, I want to commission a knife. Where do we start?
Well, the easiest way is to go to my website, MillerCustomKnives.com. And that's really cool how my guy set it up. You can actually go in there and build your knife, you know, pick your steels, pick your handles, pick, you know, what kind of blade you want.
Cool.
All the way down the line, and then it'll send me a quote, or it'll send me the quote, and then I can, you know, contact the customer either through email or phone and give them a price on it.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Other than that, Facebook is I'm on Facebook. I do a lot of business through there, or just give me a call.
Hey Corey, what are the three things that are most common that guys want in a knife?
Well, that's kind of a broad question. It all depends on what they're using it for.
So let's say a fillet knife. We'll just go with that.
I was just going to say that. A lot of times, like if you call me and say, hey, I need an 8-inch fillet knife, and you know, I want an antler handle, or I want a composite handle with antler, you know, whatever. My first question to you is going to be, do you fillet through the ribs, or do you cut around the rib?
Yeah.
Because that makes a difference on the flexibility of the blade. Fillet knives are a tricky critter because everybody's got their own preference. So what I do is I'll leave a little bit of meat on the bone. I'll leave them a little stiff. And then once the customer gets the knife, if they say, oh, I'd like it a little bit, you know, more flexible or whatever. At that point, you know, send it back and it's free of charge and I will dial it in for them, you know.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm going to check your website out for sure. It's really an interesting thing to me to talk about getting a custom designed knife. I mean, it even, you know, hey, I might have some antlers laying around too that I might want to incorporate.
Right. I would imagine those spike horns that you have make really good handles.
Well, you got to do something with spike horns.
But yeah. Anyway, all right. Hey, Corey Miller, MillerCustomKnives.com. Look him up, and we appreciate you making time, Corey, and stay warm, and we'll be checking out your stuff, man.
All right. Thank you so much,
all
guys.
Right, take care. Yep. Well, there he is, Corey. Now, the next thing that I want to talk about is a lot of people don't know how to handle a knife, right? He talked about that difference on that heel, and we've all cut ourselves when we're trying to do something. Coming up next, we've got a chef educator, Chef Bob Schultz from the Culinary School, who teaches knife handling skills. So stick with us. We'll be back.
Hey, it's Barbecue Bob. My wife and I recently built a new addition to our home and remade the kitchen. We went to Garrett's and picked out all of our products so that everything would fit in his space well. The selection was from best price to best quality, and the service was great. The delivery team was courteous and careful. Go to Garrett's Appliance. While you're there, check out the huge selection of top brands of grills and smokers from North America. Garrett's Appliance, where families serve families. Garrett'sAppliance.com.
Hey guys, Schmoes now has two locations, 2600 Patterson here in Grand Rapids and 109 West Mitchell in Petoskey now. So when you're up north, you can grab some Schmoes as well. Remember, you can get all your favorites, Bone Crusher, Hop Knocker, Treasure Chest, Amber Tees, Michigan Hands Pale Ale, and India Pale Ale, or one of our great root beers. Once again, that's Grand Rapids and Petoskey. Engineering better Michigan beer.
And now, back to the Grillin' Guys Show.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Grillin' Guys on the Grillin' Guys Talk Network. And Barbecue Bob is on sabbatical. So I have Chaz Thompson, the baritone of beer, sitting here with me. We've been talking knives.
We're keeping it sharp today.
Right. Yes, we are. Sharper than I've been in a long time. Speaking of that, we're doing knives show today, which sounds a little odd, but we just had a really good guest on, Corey Miller from Miller Custom Knives, who makes knives. So it's like, that's kind of cool. Well, before you get one made, you ought to learn how to use one, right? And now we've got a guy on the live line, Chef Bob Schultz from the Culinary School here at Grand Rapids Community College, and he teaches a class on knife handling skills. So now joining us on live line, Chef Schultz. Thanks for your time, man.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being on again. It's good to hear.
Yeah, it's been
good
a while. It has been a while. So, you know, when you go to culinary school, I'm sure there's a lot of things you got to learn. But, you know, I don't know how many guys named Stubb that you've graduated. But I think one of the things is knife skills. Tell us a little bit about what that looks like.
Okay, great. Yeah, so that's one of the classes, one of the first classes that our culinary students take, and even in our culinary management students, is a knife skills class, or we call it our skill development class. And there's so many crucial, important things when handling a knife. Number one, you definitely want a very, very sharp knife. So a lot of students and a lot of people have a tendency to neglect their knife. So we do teach them how to put it on a stone and sharpen it, and that makes a huge difference when you're cutting anything.
Let's stop there. The stone. I know a little bit about sharpening knives, but not a lot. There's a series of stones that have different coarseness, correct? Is that proper?
That is correct. That is correct. And with the coarse, if you neglect your knife, you definitely want to hit it with a little bit of a coarser stone, but if you keep it up on a regular basis, like if you're using your chef knife daily, then once a week or once every 3 days would be sufficient on a finer stone. And that's what most of our students will do, is hit it on a fine stone and not a coarse stone.
It's like the difference of whether you use a bulldozer or you use a fine brush to get the dirt out of the way.
Right, yeah.
You know, working down to the just maintenance and a little fine.
Right.
You can just
final grade for
the
seed. Take the bulldozer away. Yeah. But anyway, exactly. So okay. So go ahead. So we got it. Sharpness is key, right? Because you don't ever want a dull knife, because the only thing you're going to cut with a dull knife is yourself.
Correct. And the other couple important notes to make is that if you're right-handed, you're using your left hand as a guide, so you need to keep your fingertips bent. Your tip of your fingertips should be bent, so when you're using the four fingers, it's a guide. It's a guide. So I'm actually resting my knife on my four fingers and slicing through a product, and the tip of your fingers has to be bent. Otherwise, you lose.
And so it's in effect, it's your second knuckle, between your second and third knuckle, right?
Correct.
Is a flat. It creates a flat surface, and your knife slides up and down on that as a guide, and you move your fingers across the product that you're slicing. And in once you practice this for a while, you really don't even need to look, because it's a feel that the guide, and you're just up and down, up and down, up and down, going across the product. That in its of itself is a huge skill.
That is correct. And the other thing is, you want to, for the most part, keep the tip of your knife on the cutting board. I mean, there's exceptions when I'm slicing mushrooms or something, if it's a bigger product. But if I'm cutting and dicing and julienne something or chefing out a basil, the tip of my knife is always going to be on the cutting board. So it's more of a rocking motion.
So you get another control safety point.
Right. Yeah, it's not sliding all over. Right.
Correct.
So what's the tip for moving your hand? Because, like, if I'm cutting a piece of fish, let's say, or you want to do let's get away from fish, an onion. I've taken a slice onion, and now I'm trying to dice it up. How do I move my guide hand across and keep the knife moving? If the tip's on the board, is it pivoting on that, or is it sliding down the board?
Sliding a little bit down the board. And I use my depending on what I'm cutting, if I'm cutting a product where I have to feed it to the knife, I'll use my opposite thumb to push the product towards the knife. So then it's actually behind my bent fingers and my between the second and third knuckle. So I'm kind of pushing it. So if I'm dicing a cucumber, dicing or slicing a zucchini or squash, I'm kind of pushing that towards my hand, and it's kind of feeding the knife at that time. Because you don't want your hands and knife to move from a central location on your cutting board. That's if you're cutting something, you know, flaying a fish or something like that is a little bit different, quite a bit different, but I'm just talking dicing and slicing.
Right.
So you're going to move the product, not the knife in your hand.
Right. Those two are kind of stationary.
Correct.
The product goes through the knife rather than the knife moving through the product. Okay, interesting.
That is correct.
So now let's talk about frozen stuff. Once in a while, you got to cut some frozen stuff. What are your tips there?
As far as if I'm ever going to chop bacon or something like that, I prefer it frozen.
Right.
But if you're cutting something frozen, as far as to put in a sauce, a soup, a protein, what exactly?
Well, pick one. I don't care. It's just there's always challenges with frozen items.
That's because Joppy doesn't remember to thaw his stuff ahead.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm fabricating like a chicken, I do like it slightly frozen.
Okay.
So it actually works pretty good. If it's a fish, fish really has to be completely thawed if I want to fillet it.
Right.
But those two products, you know, I definitely would thaw it the best I can. But if it's a frozen chicken breast.
Yeah. I guess my question is don't cut it when it's frozen, thaw it out, right?
Correct.
Or not necessarily.
That's going to be your best answer, right?
Right.
But occasionally you're going to run into something where, you know, everybody's done it. And, hey, there's times when maybe you got to grab that serrated knife.
Right.
And do some sawing.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is all of a sudden two more people come over for dinner and you're in your prep phase and now you got to double the amount of protein and it's frozen, right?
Yes. Yes. That's about your option then, yes.
Right. Yep. So then in the knife skills, are you teaching different knives to use? We've talked about a chef knife. That's a wider blade, comes down to a point on the end. But Chaz just mentioned like a serrated knife, which probably isn't a chef's knife. And what are like the top two or three knives that somebody should have in their kitchen?
You know, the serrated knife definitely works well when you're dealing with any bread products or cutting that. I like the long slicing knife, which is about a third larger or longer than the chef knife for if I'm cutting proteins. I don't really want to saw a protein, so if I'm cooking a piece of a brisket,
right,
I don't want to use a too small a knife where I'm kind of sawing through it. I want a nice slice, so I would use the slicing knife. I like a boning knife, and definitely a paring knife are the four main knives that I use primarily all the time.
So tell me the difference. Tell me the difference between a paring knife and a boning knife for those that don't know.
Okay, paring knife is generally about 3 to 4 inches, and one of your smallest knives that you'll have in your kit. And I use that for intricate carving or intricate pieces. So if I'm supreming an orange, or if I'm cutting an orange and taking the segments out, I'll use a little paring knife. If I'm cutting a zucchini and I want to carve and turn a zucchini or something like that, I'm using a paring knife. A boning knife is what I pretty much use when I'm fabricating fish and small proteins. If I'm flaying or fabricating chicken, guinea hen, breaking down tenderloins, I'll use my boning knife for that.
Hey,
and there's
Jeff,
a couple types of boning knives. Yep.
Just kind of a quick question. Is this knife skills course open to people outside the culinary program? I know some of the classes are offered as, you know, like continuing ed stuff.
That's a great question. Thank you for bringing that up. And yes, we will continue those after COVID. And we do offer a knife skills class, yes, and open to the public. And we do knife skills and some other cookery classes here.
Comes with some waiver documentation, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking we might send Randy down on a secret mission, get his skills
tuned up. I need a crash course or a brush up so that right now I got all five, but, you know, there's always that chance that something crazy is going to happen. But exactly. Anyway, so that's cool. Dan, now, what are the first, we got just a minute left. What are the biggest no-nos that you see of your students where you've got to turn them around real quick?
A knife's not for chopping any aromatics like an onion or in the onion family. You really need to slice through it. And if you blow up a knife, like a chef knife, it kind of is like a huge axe. The top of the knife is thicker than the cutting edge. So if you slice straight down an onion, that's why you cry. You lose the enzymes. You lose all that flavor in that onion by just chopping it. You want to slice it and always use a slicing motion when you're using a chef knife
And is that pushing integrity. Is that pulling that knife toward me or pushing it away from me?
Good question. Pushing away from you.
Right.
Pushing away
right.
from you. Correct.
Yep. So that's the safest way to go. Start with the tip and push through to the heel, and your slice will go down through there. And it's not a saw and it's not a chop like an axe, right? I mean, it's just a smooth motion. And I've been told, now debunk this, I could be all full of it, but I've been told that you don't cry as much with an onion if you have a really sharp knife versus a dull one.
That is correct. Yeah. That is definitely 100% correct.
Right, because again, it's a swifter cut. It's smoother. You're not disrupting the enzymes you talked about, right?
Yeah. That is correct.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. You're not assaulting it,
right? Yeah.
Well, Chef, exactly. Thanks so much for joining us on this one. It's been a idea of ours for a year or better to talk about how knives really relate into the grilling. And your class sounds like it'd be a great thing for some of our listeners to participate in if they're in the West Michigan area. So we'll look forward to the end of COVID and continuing ed and some of these great educational opportunities coming back. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure. It's nice talking to you, gentlemen.
All right. Great. Take care, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
Chef Schultz, Grand Rapids Community College culinary professor, if you will. Amazing guy. Had him on the show several times, but just a champ. But Chaz, I'm serious. I'd like to take that course.
Oh, I might want to go with you.
It'd just be fun to go and learn about it. But anyway, coming up next, we got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, so stick with us. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Shasta with Old World Olive Company. I want to personally invite you to visit one of our tasting rooms and sample any one of our certified extra virgin olive oils or aged balsamic vinegars. My knowledgeable staff can show you hundreds of pairing combinations. We also offer seasonings, tapenades, and specialty wines to complete your meal. So please, step into my kitchen and make a lasting memory of your own. Or you can visit us at theoldworldoliveco.com.
Hey, it's Barbecue Bob. My wife and I recently built a new addition to our home and remade the kitchen. We went to Garrett's and picked out all of our products so that everything would fit in his space well. The selection was from best price to best quality, and the service was great. The delivery team was courteous and careful. Go to Garrett's Appliance. While you're there, check out the huge selection of top brands of grills and smokers from North America. Garrett's Appliance, where families serve families. Garrett'sAppliance.com.
And now, back to the Grillin' Guys Show.
With the Grillin' Guys coming at you like a pit bull. We smoke butt, and it's a mittful. Shooting sauce on ribs is what men do. We like meat, and no tofu. With me and Chop, it never gets dull. The grill's so big, it's like a ship's hull. Grillin' Guys, I tell no lies. And do some great things to chicken thighs. When we're at the grill, smoking up a rack, a little taste is just like crack. We're backyard masters, barbecue blasters. Nobody grills a T-bone faster. So when you see the Grilling Guys rig, hit the brakes, it's gonna be big. So check us out and have no doubt, the Grilling Guys will make the crowd shout. Stick around and put down the rake, fire up the grill, there's no need to bake. You bring the party, we'll bring the smoke. You're gonna eat so much you might choke. So here's how it goes, and everyone knows, you gotta listen to the Grilling Guys show. That's it.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Grilling Guys. We appreciate you tuning in each and every week. Had a little bit of fun. Chef Schultz from the Culinary School. Great guy. Big supporter of the Grilling Guys and teaches knife skills. So we've been talking about knives for most of the show. No reason to stop. Now, Chaz and I have been working on this thing for a while, off and on, and here we are. So, Chaz, You've made a little list of knives that are in your chef's roll. Not everybody's a chef, but you should probably have some of these knives, right?
Well, a chef's roll, you know, you see these guys on TV and stuff, and they all have their little leather roll that they roll out.
Right.
For you, it might be that block
right
that's next to the stove. Or you might have a little kit that you take out to the grill. And what do you really need in there?
Right.
And the chef's roll also goes into how do you store your knife so it doesn't get banged up.
Right, because two knives rubbing together will dull each other. It's steel sharpens steel in the Bible, but it doesn't work that way in your knife drawer.
Yeah, it's steel at the proper angle.
Right, yeah,
will exactly get sharp. But some of the things that I keep in my chef's roll, obviously a nice big 10 to 12 inch chef's knife. It is the go-to workhorse of the board.
Right.
Whether you're doing protein or vegetables or whatever, if you went over to see Tim Sobey and you bought a nice big piece of meat, you got to do a little trimming on it or whatever stuff, you're going to grab the chef's knife.
Right.
Real quick.
Right.
You got to chop up the onion. You got to chop up some of the other things. You're going to go to that chef's knife. It's great. You're smashing the garlic.
Right. It's a little heavier. Right. You get a clove of garlic. It's got the paper on it still. You turn that thing flat ways, hit it on the top. It'll smush that garlic enough that you can peel the paper off. Dice it up with the rest of the knife. And
yeah, you learn
good,
how
man
to use that. It is the workhorse. But there are also some special ones that you need. A boning knife.
Right.
Boning knife is very handy if you've got a chicken to cut up.
Right.
If you've got another piece of meat that's got a bone in it that you need to work around the bone, it's a little more limber. It's a little thinner. It's got a sharper point on it. It's not that big wide body knife.
Right. It doesn't have a big heavy tail on it. There's the point in the tail of the knife right before the hand. And in a chef's knife, that tail could be an inch and a half, 2 inches tall. This boning knife may be down to like an inch.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's really so you can get between those bones or get the meat off the bone if you're deboning chicken thighs or something like that.
Right. And it's not as heavy. It's you got more dexterity with it.
Right. And it's for that job.
Right.
Now, I'm also going to bring along, obviously, a paring knife.
Right.
And we were talking off air about paring knife, and that's a little short knife that you learn to do detail work with. Whether you're popping the core out of a tomato.
Right.
Maybe you're peeling a tomato real quick. Whatever it is, just little detail work, that paring knife.
Right.
Is the go-to for that.
And I, yeah, like I, like we talked about off air there, is that you see chefs on TV. I'm a Food Network junkie and lots of YouTubes. Well, they'll have the handle of that knife in their first three fingers, and then they're pinching the first like half inch of the blade between their index finger and their thumb so that they've got complete dexterity with that thing. And they're flashing that thing around and maybe only using the last inch and a half of that knife tip.
Yeah, because it's for that detail work.
Right.
And that's really good.
Right.
Now, other thing, other knives that I'm going to definitely carry, because we got grills and smokers and right. stuff like that, a slicing knife.
Right.
And a slicing knife is probably the longest knife you're going to have in there. And that's so that you can get a real nice long draw, single motion, to get a real nice smooth cut. Your presentation and up a brisket.
Right.
Or maybe you've done a nice roulade roll or something like that.
Right.
You know, porchetta or something like that. And you want a nice, smooth, long slice.
And I've found that knife is pretty flexible, too. I mean, front to back, it, and I think it doesn't get its day for what it's a specialty knife. But, boy, when you need that for the things you just described, it is the knife. There's no substitute for that long slicing knife.
It's thin, and you're slicing cooked meat.
Right.
It's already cooked down tender and lovely.
Right.
You take a chef's knife, you're going to kind of mash and mangle up your brisket.
Right.
But that slicing knife is real thin, and it's just that long draw for it.
And that's a straight knife. Doesn't have any curl on it. And it, you might have front to back.
Little scallops on it and stuff.
Front to back, though, from the heel to the nose, it's all the same height.
Yeah, about a half inch.
Right.
Probably 14, 18 inches long.
Right. And if you took it, you could wobble it. Between, because it's got a little bit of flexibility. It's not a hardened
exactly.
knife.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, I'm also going to throw a bread knife in there.
Sure.
Because there's nothing like having a, you know, good slice of bread, mm-hmm. you know, some French roll or something, you toast on the grill or whatever.
Right.
It's all going to go in there. Now, there's a couple other things.
That's a serrated knife, right?
That's a serrated knife. And it's meant to cut bread.
Grab a little bit.
Grab a little bit.
To get through the crust.
It's a saw. Okay. Right. And that's going to cut your bread without crushing the bread.
Right.
Where a chef's knife might crush it down, this is going to saw. I mean, it's like a big old crosscut saw you see the lumberjacks using,
right.
but this is a kitchen version. And you can cut your bread very nice with that without mashing it down.
Right.
Because if you baked your own bread, like, you know, we throw some bread in a Dutch oven on the grill.
Right.
I don't want to ruin it by mashing it all down.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Now, some other things you want to keep in there is definitely a steel.
Right.
And these honing steels are just for knife maintenance.
Yep.
They're not a sharpener. Now, the best examples I've ever seen is on a microscopic level, they show you the edge of a knife.
Okay.
And it looks like a sawtooth.
Right.
Because there's these, what they call feathers on the edge. Mm-hmm. Well, as you use it, those feathers get bent. And now the steel, at that proper angle, by around 20 degrees, you draw that away from you so that you're pulling and lining those feathers back up on that knife edge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a good maintenance thing.
And it's not 50 of those. It's
two or three swipes.
Two or three swipes and you're done.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with taking a little sanitizer rag, wiping your knife down, and then doing a quick steel on it.
Right.
And that steel is pretty durable. You can throw it in the dish machine. You can wash it with the other dishes.
Right.
Keep it clean, just like everything, and work very nice and treat your knife nice.
Right. Right.
Then the other one is that, because you and I run into those knives that our friends unfortunately have, that you're not sure which side's supposed to be sharp. I do carry a sharpener.
Right.
It's not a big fancy one. I carry a stone. I carry a little pocket sharpener so that I can do a little emergency repair work.
Right.
We've all been to that buddy's cabin that has a drawer full of knives banging around.
And you know, I'm not boasting. I'm just saying, when you go there and you're a grilling guy, they're like, you're cooking. And
exactly.
I'm like, oh, all right, I'm cooking. So then it's like, well, what do we got? Well, what we've got is a bunch of butter knives that he calls butcher knives. And they suck because they're the ones that they wore out at home. And they took them to the cottage because they're not up there much. But then when you're there, they want you to perform.
Or they bought them at Walmart.
Right, exactly, because they're at the cottage and we're not up there much. So I tend to anticipate things like you do. And I always have three or four knives Whenever I'm going anywhere like that, I bring my own.
Now, because I'm an ice fishing guy.
Right.
In the truck, I've got 2 to 3 fillet knives with me as well.
Right, and we're going to talk about that in the next segment.
Oh, yeah.
Because we want to talk a little bit of ice fishing and finish with some fillet and
fish. Important thing about storing your knives.
Yeah.
If that knife came with a scabbard, keep that scabbard. The scabbard's that hard plastic or leather or whatever.
It's a protective sheath
to go over it. I mean, it's the same reason that you fold up your pocket knife before you put it in your pocket.
Yeah, not just because you don't want to cut yourself. Right.
Right. So you want to take care of that knife. Treat it. I mean, a lot of these knives are expensive.
Sure they are.
You know, we call Corey. I'm expecting to see a 3-digit number as a starting spot.
Exactly. We didn't ask him on that because it's kind of like how much the cars cost, right? But at the end of the day, you're not getting anything custom made that isn't going to cost you a little bit. But
and even if you go down to one of the local chef supply stores or Gordon Foods or wherever it is, and you pick up a quality kitchen commercial knife,
right?
You're spending some bucks.
Yes, you are. Rightfully so. All right, we're going to bring this train to the station. We're going to go back to the ice fishing and maybe fillet a fish. Stick with us. We'll be back.
Hey, this is Job from the Grilling Guys, and I want to talk to you about my favorite butcher shop. It's Sobey Meats on the northwest side of Grand Rapids on Remembrance Road. This is a custom butcher. They'll cut any piece of meat that you want, any size, any way that you can dream of to make sure that your grilling experience is perfect. Sobey Meats smokes all their own meats. They've got kielbasas and over 40 different flavors of brats. You got to try Sobey Meats on Remembrance Road. Tell them the Grilling Guys sent you.
Fenn Valley Vineyards, located on the shores of Lake Michigan in Fennville, Michigan, 45 minutes south of Grand Rapids. It's one of the most beautiful, most picturesque vineyards in North America. This family's been making wine for over 40 years. You have to bring your friends and family to the tasting room and experience pure Michigan wine. Fenn Valley Vineyards.
Time for some man law. Since Bob's not here, I don't have his magic list of them, so I went to a good source of rules, and that's one of my favorite shows, NCIS. One of the characters on there, Gibbs, has his set of rules and such, and I love his rule 9. Never leave the house without a knife.
And you don't have to carry one on your person if you don't want to. Sometimes they're a little big. It's inappropriate to have it hanging on your belt or whatever, but have it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what consoles of trucks are for. That's what pockets are for in jackets. But I don't care if it's just a 3-inch blade that, you know, is a folding knife or whatever. I'm not talking anything that's
You might
huge.
Have to peel an apple.
Right.
You might hit a deer and have to gut the deer on the side of the road.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
You might get to a place and the guy serves you a steak that's so hard.
Right.
And his butter knife does not cut it. You got to have your own.
Here's my favorite. I might be driving down the road and get the munchies, and I stop and buy a ring of pickled bologna and a block of cheese and a pack of crackers. Right? I can't tell you how many times I've driven down the road with one knee on the steering wheel while I'm cutting my bologna and cheese. Man, come on. You got to have a knife with you.
You got to have a knife with you. And it's a tool.
Right, it is.
And anybody that calls it a weapon, I ain't in the war.
Right.
This is a tool that a man knows how to use.
Right.
And he carries what he's comfortable with.
So let's talk about fillet knives, because you're our consummate ice fisherman, and you're oftentimes filleting semi-frozen fish, probably letting them thaw out most of the time, but once in a while.
Yeah, they're going to be cold because they're ice fishing, you know, and we're going to be out there catching the fish, and quite often they freeze. We try and thaw them out when we come back, but still, you need to clean a fish, and you want to clean it to get the most meat off it possible.
Right.
And you need the fillet knife you're comfortable with. Now, I'm catching bluegill and crappie.
Right.
So my go-to is going to be a little 4-inch Rapella.
Right.
They see guys that say, that thing's silly. Look at the one I got that's 14 inches long. I says, your fish is 8 inches long.
Right.
Yeah. Let's get serious about how big is the fillet.
Right.
And we keep those razor sharp, and they have a very, very thin, supple blade.
Yep.
So
and supple because you want to maybe bend it a little bit when you get right behind that rib cage and you're pushing through to get that tail meat off of there. Sometimes there's a little bow in that knife that you want to get the right angle and the tips out of the fish. And the knife's
and
going through it.
You're
going
to pop through the pin bones, go up and over the ribs is how I do them. But then you're going to flip that fillet over, take that same knife, and pull the skin right off. Now, that's the way I do them.
Right.
Because when you scale fish, you don't want to do that at anybody's house because scales go everywhere.
Right, yeah. So and all over you, too.
Skinning fish and having that knife well-maintained, sharp, clean.
Now, for me, when I was a younger man, I used to go fishing with a couple guys. It was actually a guy and his dad, my buddy Big Weed and his dad, Walt. And my knife skills were terrible when I was in high school, right? So what they did is, because I'd butcher the fish. Since then, I've figured it out. But I'd butcher the fish. So they would clean the fish, and they'd flip them over to me to skin them, right? Because I could, as the skinner, I could keep up with two guys filleting, right? And we'd go up to Drummond Island, we'd catch perch, and it was wonderful. But I always thought that a little bit of a dull knife was better because if I didn't hold that angle just right, when I tried to run that skin and take the skin off the fish, I'd cut through the skin, and then it's a giant pain. So, again, what it was is it's all about the angle.
It's all about the angle.
It's all about the angle.
If you have trouble skinning a fish, get a fork, just a junky old fork. And use that to hold the skin. And if you keep it like a slicing knife and just go long draws with that, maybe a couple of them on a big crappie.
Right.
You know, you're going to get the most meat right off there.
Right. It leaves that skin just paper thin.
And then if you're good, you just pick up that skin with the tip of your knife and over into the trash.
Right. Exactly. And go to the next one.
Go to the next one. It's like you said, zip, zip, zip.
Yeah. Hey, Chaz, thanks so much for making time today and joining me here at the Grilling Guys. Barbecue Bob will be back next week. And
I think Bob will be jealous that
he
talk
will.
Nice.
He missed it, but you know what? That is not anything he's missed. But, you know, we appreciate you tuning in each and every week to the Grilling Guys. Thanks for listening in. Chaz, cheers to you, brother, and catch a lot of fish this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys, if you can't get there on time, you know, the podcast is always there, too.
All right. Take care. We'll talk to you next week.